It's July 4th tomorrow, American Independence Day, and I thought it would be an opportune time to explore how the U.S. military can assist U.S.-based pre-meds to become physicians. As you learn in this fascinating interview, there are lots of ways. Happy 4th of July. Welcome to the 266th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm accepted!" And not only accepted, but accepted to the best program for you. This episode of Admissions Straight Talk is brought to you by Accepted's upcoming webinar, How to Create Successful Secondary Applications, to be presented on July 10th by Alicia McNeese Moncar, Accepted consultant and former UC Davis post-bac program director. Don't let a deluge of secondary essays bury you. Come to the webinar and figure out what you need to do it right. The webinar is free, but you do need to register. And of course, we'll link the registration page from the show notes at accepted.com/266. Reserve your spot ASAP. Our guest today is Captain Jennifer A. Cox. She graduated from Lewis University in 2011 with a BSN. While earning her BSN, she was also an Army ROTC cadet. She entered active duty as a second lieutenant in the Army Nurse Corps and has served at Fort Hood, Texas and Joint Base San Antonio, Texas. She earned her Critical Care Registered Nurse License in 2016 and then worked in the Neurosurgical Trauma Intensive Care Unit. Currently, Captain Cox is the officer in charge at the Charleston, South Carolina, U.S. Army Medical Recruiting Station. She has embraced this opportunity to commission fellow Army Medical Department officers while enjoying Charleston with her husband and looks forward to her next assignment. Captain Cox, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you so much, Linda. I appreciate you having me.
I'm delighted. Can you tell us a little bit about your story? How did you come to be an Army nurse and recruiter?
Absolutely. Full story could take all 30 minutes, so I'll keep it short. All through growing up, I thought I wanted to be a special ed teacher, and then that did not pan out as I thought it would as I got to college. So kind of had a revelation during a meeting with a guidance counselor. I saw the schedule for nursing clinicals on the wall, and I thought, well, that's kind of perfect. I can help people, and I can be involved in science, which had been my favorite subject. So the rest is kind of history, but needless to say, I'm pretty familiar with the admissions process since it took a few schools to get where I am now. As far as the Army part of things, I feel like I grew up in the military a little bit. My dad is a Naval Academy graduate, so I had those Saturday morning room inspections before I could go out and play with my friends. So the military seemed like a natural progression. As soon as I thought about nursing, I saw an ROTC brochure during a school tour. And so I met with the ROTC director, and before I knew it, I was gone to Fort Knox for training that summer. And it fell between when I graduated with a science degree and before I started my BSN, so kind of meshed perfectly. And then as far as becoming a recruiter, I spent my first 6 years in the military as an RN, kind of only seeing the military treatment facility or hospital side of things. So I just wanted to expand my horizons a little bit and see more of the Army. So I applied for a broadening assignment. So when I found out I could be the officer in charge, I thought that would be a good leadership challenge for me being a junior captain. And also having the opportunity to live in Charleston didn't hurt at all either. So now I really like the opportunity that I can pick my AMED family, my medical department family. So that's how I got here.
It's interesting that you have such an opportunity in the Army to do something on one hand related, and on the other hand, very, very different from working as a nurse.
Absolutely. It's, I think, a personal growth challenge and definitely not unusual for how the military operates. I think it'll prepare me for more leadership opportunities down the road, too. So very neat experience.
Yeah. How does the U.S. Army help MD and DO wannabes become debt-free doctors? And we're kind of turning away from your personal story to the Army now.
Absolutely. So there's a few different routes. There are two routes if you are wanting to go the civilian medical education route, and then another if you want to start off in the military right away. So the first is an active duty option. It's called the Health Professions Scholarship Program. Mm-hmm. And this scholarship provides 100% of your tuition, any academic fees, and you also get a monthly stipend during school of about a little over $2,200.
Oh, that's during medical school, right? That's not during undergraduate.
Yes. No, during medical school.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you begin, this is a 3 or 4 year scholarship. So when you begin, you're commissioned as a second lieutenant, which is the first officer rank. And when you graduate from medical school, you're promoted to the third officer rank or captain. Then you can begin earning your captain pay when you start. And along with that scholarship, there's also a bonus that you can elect for or not. That's a $20,000 bonus that's paid in 3 different increments. So if you take that scholarship, you're also promised or offered at least that bonus, too, if you'd like it.
Wow.
So that's probably our most popular option because it covers 100% of your tuition.
So and you don't get any accredited U.S. medical school, right?
Correct. Yep. As long as they're accredited and they can't be online and they have to be full-time programs.
Okay. And what's the other route that you mentioned?
There's a reserve option as well. So that's the medical school stipend program. Mm-hmm. It does not cover your tuition and fees. You just get that monthly stipend of a little over $2,200 each month while you're in school. And then you have the opportunity for loan repayment after the fact. So if you begin your residency in a certain residency program, you can get loan repayment for that.
So if you go the Army Reserve route, again, that provides a stipend but doesn't actually pay tuition. And then if you do residency in the Army, then the Army would pay your debt. Am I understanding you correctly or did I misunderstand?
You don't have to do your residency in the Army in order to do the loan repayment program. So if you do the reserve route and receive only the stipend, then you'll actually do a civilian residency program. Mm-hmm. But if it's in a certain specialty that's in need in the military, then we'll offer you that loan repayment program, and you can actually continue to receive your stipend as well.
I see. And what are the obligations incurred for the Health Professions Scholarship Program, HPSP, or for the Reserve Program?
Sure. So the HPSP scholarship is a 1 year for 1 year. So for each year you receive the scholarship, you have a 1 year active duty obligation.
Got it.
So the bonus that I had mentioned mm-hmm. is a 4-year mm-hmm. obligation. So if you take the scholarship for 3 years, your active duty obligation would be 4 years instead of that 3. If you take it for all 4 years, then there's no change. It's still 4 years.
So the maximum obligation is 4 years.
Yes.
Got it. What about the U.S. Uniformed Health Services
USIS, USHOOS, there's several different
terms.
Yeah. It's the Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences.
Yeah, I messed that up pretty badly. Okay.
You're definitely not the only one. So that's another option that's super unique to the military. The Uniformed Services University is the only tuition-free medical school that actually pays you to attend. So just like how you're commissioned as an officer, if you start off with the HPSP or MSSP options, you're also commissioned as a second lieutenant when you start at USHOOS, and you earn the pay and have all of those same allowances as an active duty officer while you're in school.
Hmm.
And on top of that, they'll pay your tuition and fees.
Wow. Is it the same obligation in terms of service after you get your MD? And what about residency?
It's a different obligation, of course, because you're getting full pay and allowances as an active duty officer. Yeah. The obligation is longer, and that obligation is 7 years, and it begins after your residency is complete. So you would do an Army residency, and then your obligation begins after that.
Okay. And let's say somebody does either the HPSP or the or attends the USUS. Well, at some point you'll teach me how to pronounce it. They go either route. What are the professional benefits to starting one's medical career in the military? They'll be in for 4 years or 7 years or 3 years, whatever it is, and then they're going to go perhaps back to civilian medical career. What are the benefits?
There's so many benefits. Since we're talking scholarship, I think the first one to mention is that if you can begin your career debt-free, then you don't have any of that weight on your shoulders. You're not worried about your financial obligations, so you can truly focus on what you've been in school for, that profession, and you know, the next steps that you want to take in your career without that extra burden. The most common answer that I hear from Medical Corps officers and doctors is that being a medical officer in the military allows them to actually practice medicine because they don't have the civilian factors like all the administrative issues like insurance and billing and things like that. They can just truly focus on being clinically excellent. I could go on and on. There's so many different opportunities like working in a variety of work environments. So you can be in a clinic or a smaller community hospital. You could be in several of the larger medical centers that we have. You can participate in humanitarian missions without, you know, having to close up your practice or having to leave your patients at the hospital. You know, they'll be there when you get back, and you can take the time to go on these different missions if you want. And also deployments. You know, deployments to civilians has a very scary connotation, but if you look at it through the perspective of a medical provider, it can be extremely challenging and a professionally rewarding experience. So that's also a very common thing that I hear from doctors.
I think also from a civilian perspective, the idea that you have to go where you're told is a little bit scary, but from the way you're talking, you have a certain amount of choice.
You do, absolutely. I think that you have to have the Army work for you as much as you can. The more that you voice your opinion, I think that you can have a lot of say. Of course, you know, the Army needs will come first and, you know, mission first. You hear that all the time. But I think you take the good with the bad and everything balances out. And that's, you know, no different. I think you can still have autonomy of your career. Absolutely.
What are a few of the more significant differences between civilian and military medical practice? I mean, you mentioned the lack of insurance influence on military practice. But what are some of the other ones? Or what are some of the implications of that one?
Like I mentioned before, I think that you can just focus on being clinically excellent. I think that's a huge push in the military, is that we have to make sure our providers are trained to be able to go practice in austere environments and on the drop of a hat. We can't train mediocre providers to go overseas and take care of our soldiers when they need it the most. So there's a lot of different education that takes place, and specifically at USUS, they have almost 1,000 additional hours of training compared to a regular medical school because they go year-round. So there's a lot more focus on leadership, a lot more focus on military-relevant topics, extra training in military medicine and diseases that we may encounter in a deployed setting, and combat casualty care, trauma, all that stuff is huge. So a different focus definitely that is unique to the military setting.
I would assume that for people who are particularly interested in either critical care or trauma, ER, you know, orthopedics, perhaps neuro also.
We also need just family medicine too.
I guess, yeah, people still get colds in the military, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think being a doctor on the civilian or military side, it's a demanding career. You know, you spend a lot of time away from your family. So I think also one of the differences is that on the military side, the military extends to your family, and there's so many other support programs, and there's family readiness groups that are there for your family, and especially if you live on post. So many added benefits that, you know, when you're working those long shifts or going on a mission or deployment, you know your family is being taken care of.
What about, let's say I'm interested. I like the idea of, you know, focusing on clinical excellence. I like the idea of not having to deal with insurance. I like the idea of serving my country. I like the idea of emerging from medical school debt-free. What's the process? Let's assume I'm now a sophomore in college.
Sure. So sophomore in college is the perfect time. I always like to encourage people by their junior year to talk to a healthcare recruiter, specifically a healthcare recruiter. A big misconception is that you can't apply for our programs until you've already been accepted to medical school, and that's not the case. The best time to come talk to us and apply for our programs is the same exact time you're applying for medical school. So when you're studying for that MCAT, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do ahead of time to not take away from that.
Mm-hmm.
That test, because you'll have to get, you know, certain scores anyway. So the best time of year again is, you know, that junior year as you're applying for medical school, getting ready to take that MCAT. And then the process with us will be a face-to-face sit down, or, you know, on the phone if you're, you know, geographically further away. But we'll discuss your goals and identify what program will work best for you. We'll identify your board date. That'll kind of set up a timeline for when we need to get everything accomplished. And we'll collect your source documents, so like your Social Security card, birth certificate. That's another reason why it's good your junior year. Sometimes those are locked up in a parent's lock.
Yeah.
You know, safety deposit box.
Sometimes. Or they have no idea where it is.
Exactly. Yeah. So requesting replacements of those can take some time.
Yeah.
And then we'll get your transcripts and letters of recommendation, dean's letters, all that type of stuff, all done to be able to complete your packet and have it ready for the board. So oftentimes you can actually be selected before we even know that you have a letter of acceptance to a school yet. So you can kind of get all of our process out of the way and still enjoy a little bit of time before you're starting medical school.
What about the requirements for either the scholar? Well, obviously, if you apply for the scholarship, you have to get into a medical school, but for the uniformed services medical school.
Sure. So, of course, there's going to be the across-the-board requirements because you're earning a commission as an officer in the Army. So citizenship, certain physical, moral standards, age will apply. But specifically for the health profession scholarship, so the one that covers your tuition, it'll be a minimum MCAT score of 500 with a 124 in each category, and a cumulative undergrad GPA of 3.2. For the reserve option, there's no written down minimums, but I would suggest similar to the HPSB in order to be competitive for that.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Uniformed Services University, the average GPA and MCAT of newly accepted students there is a GPA of 3.6.
Mm-hmm.
And an MCAT of 509.
Okay. Right.
We'll higher requirements there.
Do you have to be in the ROTC to be in these programs, to get either the scholarship or to be accepted to uniform services?
No, not at all. So ROTC students are eligible. They'll just still have to fulfill their ROTC obligation, but they can request an educational delay through their undergrad program and still participate in the scholarships. And same with the Uniformed Services University, you don't need any type of prior service.
All right. Can you touch on other healthcare professions and educations for a second, like dentists, for example, or PA, physician assistant opportunities?
Sure. So I feel like the opportunities are endless. It could be a whole other call to talk about everything else. The main one is that dental school is almost identical to medical school. So mm-hmm. they also have the opportunity for HPSP, and instead of the medical school stipend program, it's just the dental school stipend program. So exactly the same. And same with vet school, actually. That's a 3-year HPSP program as well. For physician assistants, we have an inter-service physician's assistance program that's for currently serving soldiers who want to become a PA, regardless of their background. If you come in as an already credentialed physician assistant, then there's special pay and loan repayment options as well. And we have other things like HPSP scholarships for nurses going to graduate school. We have master's in social work programs.
Really?
A bunch. Yeah, definitely.
What would you have liked me to ask you that I didn't ask you? Is there something that you'd like, you know, potential beneficiaries of these opportunities to know?
I think take some time to look at military medicine. So many people think that if they're in the military and they're a doctor, they're only going to work at a VA or that, you know, we're kind of substandard, or, you know, you can only do these programs if you need money. There's just so many myths surrounding military medicine. And I think that it's super unfortunate because the military leads the way in so many things medically. So just take the time to give it a chance and look at everything that we have to offer and just take a look inside, see if it's something that you would be interested in.
This has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you for joining me today, Captain Cox. Where can listeners learn more about the opportunities in medicine?
Sure. So for Army healthcare programs in general, you can go to goarmy.com/AMED, which is AMEDD. So there's links on there about all of the different programs, and you can actually click find a recruiter and put some information in to find out who's near you, who you can reach out to. And for the Uniformed Services University, their website is www.usuhs.mil, M-I-L. And lastly, we have a Facebook page here at my office, which is U.S. Army Medical Recruiting Station, Charleston, SC, for South Carolina.
Tell you what, can you send me that link and we'll include it in the show notes, which is accepted.com/264. So we'll include links both to goarmy.com, AMED, usuhs.mil, and then the Facebook page that I'm not even going to try and repeat. Okay. As well as to other resources that may be helpful to you listeners. Listener, thank you too for joining me for this, our 266th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with deans, admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, alumni doing great things, or representatives of the U.S. Army. You can find subscribe links in the show notes at accept.com/266. And a final reminder to register for How to Create Successful Secondary Applications, our upcoming July 10th webinar. You can find a registration link in today's show notes at accepted.com/266. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.